Now that you've enjoyed your Victory Monday, Steelers fans, it's time to get back into the office, back into the drawing board, and see what the Steelers got to do moving forward. But before we even do that about X's and O's or anything else, we got to talk about, should they be in the trade market? The deadline's coming up, and big trades are being made all across the NFL. Joining me to talk about that, of course, is our guy, Tony Serino. We're going to talk about who should be traded, who might be traded, who will be traded before the trade deadline pops up, and all of those topics, along with talking about the snap counts from the Browns game and looking at that rushing offense just a little bit closer now that we've looked at some more film. I'm Chris Carter, your host here on the Locked On Steelers podcast. We thank you for making the Locked On Steelers podcast your first listen every day. We're available free on all platforms, especially YouTube, Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Odyssey. Let's get into it.
You are Locked On Steelers, your daily Pittsburgh Steelers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And welcome to the Locked On Steelers podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter, bringing you your daily dose of all things of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Remember, you can subscribe to this show on Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Odyssey, and on YouTube. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Like this video on YouTube to help us out. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Carter Critiques. But as always, on a Tuesday, it's not just any Tuesday. It's time for a Tony Tuesday, because Tony Serino is back, and it's no Blues Day.
No.
Tony, you went on AFC North Talk Tuesday or Monday night and talked your stuff.
The Browns is the Browns, Chris. The Browns is the Browns. And I don't say that glib, and I don't say that like, oh, you know, Juju was right. I mean that the Browns are and always have been a loser franchise with a loser mentality. And that's who they were on Sunday.
That's dang. Just come on with the straight heat for the Browns. And listen, you've been taking your fair share of lumps on the AFC North talk show that you do on YouTube with your guys.
Yeah,
man.
Let them. Because here's the thing. And you'll hear me say this on AFC North talk. Let them talk their talk. Enjoy the wild card win, because to Steelers fans, it's a foot. That wild card loss is a footnote in history. To the Browns, that's the Super Bowl. And it's because the Steelers will always be their big brother, and the Browns will always be the Browns.
That dang, just coming the straight fire. I'll also say this. It was funny to see Browns fans say, well, what about the wild card game? And yeah. Wow, this was really your Super Bowl. When it's like, I'm sorry. Have you ever seen the Browns win a Super Bowl? Has anyone ever seen the Browns win a Super Bowl? Like I was sitting there like, is this the hill that you want to die on? But I get it. Imitation is the greatest form of flattery. Is that the Browns were just like, you know what? That loss hurt. We really thought we were better than the Steelers. We want to just be like, you know what? Let's just go say what they said. And you know, because the Steelers fans, this was your Super Bowl. Congratulations. You're eating it up. And they lost to Chad Henne the next week in the playoffs. And now they're 4-4 in a year that they're supposed to be Super Bowl contenders. They're supposed to be the unstoppable Browns. Everything's lined up for them. Quarterback on a rookie contract. All these free agents you brought in to boost your defense. 3 number one overall picks on your roster. And here you are losing to Ben Roethlisberger with a whole bunch of rookies in old man form. But you know, there's a lot of stuff there. But
yeah.
Enough about the Browns. Go watch AFC North Talk to watch what Tony did to them folk on that show.
Not just the Browns. Bengals fans are getting it too.
Oh yeah, I mean
following AFC North Talk,
loss
to
the Jets. Okay,
Steelers fans deserve a little heat, and they are certainly getting it.
Steelers fans, I have to let y'all know, I'm gonna be looking like a fool on the Friday episode of the Locked On NFL podcast. So this all happened because our boy, your boy Q, who hosts the Raiders podcast, he lost a bet. He said the Ravens would beat the Bengals, so he had to wear Bengals face paint. So then I had to do the same. So I thought I'd be a smart person. I said the Bengals would beat the Jets. And I said, if the Bengals lose, I'll wear Jets face paint. I thought that was a safe pick, right? No, I bet on the Bengals. This is on me. I'm an idiot. So anyways, there's that. Let's get into a real topic here on the Steelers though, Tony. The trade deadline is upon us. All the teams are making big moves. Von Miller going to the Rams. Huge. Didn't see that coming. I get it. Broncos are like, listen, we're selling this year. I get that. The Steelers obviously have to be buyers after the way that they played Sunday. You know, if they're going to be anything, they're not sellers here. But There are two players in particular that I know a lot of people are talking about. Melvin Ingram, because of the story that leaked out last week. And, you know, this is the week. If it doesn't happen this week, what happened? You know, he has to just live out this year. And a lot of people have talked about Eric Ebron, especially because Pat Freiermuth, amazing game-changing, game-winning touchdown catch against the Browns. He's played well this season. He's a rookie that's shining bright early. And Zach Entry really coming up and looking like a solid number two tight end. And so people are like, what do you need Eric Ebron for? And to be frank, what did they need Melvin Ingram for? The run defense was on point and they got after Baker Mayfield. That's one of the teams that they need to beat. But Tony, should the Steelers be looking really hard to unload any of these guys to get anything specific?
I do, because I think, you know, you talked about the Steelers not being sellers, and I agree with that in principle. Right? You don't want to sell true assets, right? It's not like this team needs to unload,
right,
you know, someone like a Terrell Edmonds or something, right? Guy that's in a contract year and all that, just to get rid of it. You're not doing that. But I do think when you look at Melvin Ingram, certainly this, and Mike Tomlin and that front office is going to know better, because they're going to have to talk to him and have the real inside scoop. But from where we sit today, it does feel like, from all the reporting, Melvin Ingram doesn't want to be around. And I don't think the Steelers want to go through another, you know, James Harrison at the end type situation. But the Steelers have certainly, you know, Mike Tomlin is certainly well aware of what a player like that can do to a locker room. If he truly does not want to be there, if he is truly unhappy with his role on the football team, you know, you may need to just unload that asset, even though Ingram's been really, really good for them. And if Ingram was enjoying his time on the Steelers and this wasn't kind of an off the field type issue, I think the Steelers would be very silly to trade him. But because I think there's issues there off the field, they have to do that just to maintain that locker room. And the Ebron thing, look, he talked to the media last week. I know that was at the request of the media, and he didn't really come out and say, you know, anything that crazy, but, you know, there's a bit of reading beneath the reading.
You don't even need to read between the lines. He was like, I don't want to be a distraction. He's like, oh yeah, okay. So is it a problem? He's like, yeah, it's a problem. And it's like, I was like, okay. Like, you know, but Eric, that's what Eric do. He talks, he wants to be part of the game plan.
Right.
I get it. Yeah. But he hasn't come out, and at least his camp hasn't come out and made the kind of moves that has gotten Melvin Ingram into the spotlight. And Melvin Ingram's different. Eric Ebron, you could work around and be like, yo, Eric, hey, man, you know, you ain't healthy. That's fine. We'll deal with that. But Melvin Ingram is a piece that the Steelers got that I think that is an important piece to this defense, as well as they played without him. And as much as TJ Watt and Alex Highsmith, Watt played, let's see, it's 86% of the snaps. Highsmith played 92% of the snaps on Sunday against the Browns. And great job there. But we know there's going to be games where that's not possible. And you know you're going to need a Melvin Ingram type. The only way this would work is if you got a viable edge guy that would be able to come in. And maybe Tackle Charlton is that. He got his first action of the season, only 10 snaps though. So, you know, not a whole lot to really look at there.
Yeah.
My thing here, Tony, is unless they're getting an important piece somewhere else, there's no reason to do this, or a ridiculous draft pick. Like that's the thing. Like, it would have to be a day two draft pick that's like, all right, you know what? For that, that's right. But anything beyond a third round draft pick for Melvin Ingram is a joke, unless you're getting a new defensive tackle because you're just not sure about when Stephon Tuitt comes back, or, you know, another cornerback who you think will be allow Cam Sutton to be more aggressive and where he lines up, or, you know, a better offensive lineman at a spot that you think that you could really upgrade on. But I'm not so sure. It's just that those guys lying around right here. This is a situation where another team has to kind of come in and make the move and show you how much they want Melvin Ingram.
Yeah, I worry about that off the field problem of, like, you know, you have a guy.
I agree. That's an issue.
Player in the locker room that you now, you know, it's something else that Mike Tomlin has to deal with. You know, he's already, look, the guy's doing a fantastic job this year coaching up this team, all these young players have to come in and play. Boy, he doesn't need a headache like Melvin Ingram. That's where I'd say, look, the Steelers next year, they've already traded away a lot of those assets in the draft. You know, this team is probably going to get a compensatory fifth round pick. You know, all the compensatory formula stuff is getting thrown off this year. It's crazy. But, like, the Steelers basically right now have picks 1, 2, and 3, and then I believe they have 2 7s. The rest of it has been traded away. I you know, I'm going to disagree with you on this, Chris. I think I would take, especially a high day three, if it was like a fourth or a fifth round pick for Melvin Ingram, just to be sure the Steelers aren't going to have, because I'm with you on the field stuff. As I said, Ingram is really, really important on the field. He has been very, very good for this team. But boy, you know, the harmony in the locker room, I think, is so important to this team because of how young they are and how much this coaching staff is having to coach up some of these young guys. Boy, they don't need a headache in there, you know, in the form of a vet who doesn't want to be around. That's where I think you may have to let him go. And they'll know better than I will based on conversations they've had with him. But I think if this is going to be any sort of trouble for them, it's more trouble than it's worth.
I will say this. If it is a headache situation, yes, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
But if it's a situation where it's like James Washington, where we heard, I mean, that rumor was hardcore during training camp. And, you know, there was a lot of talk about that. And now that rumor's gone, even though James Washington isn't like a focal part of the offense, it's gone. With Juju hurt, he's going to get more time. And I believe he got, I'm just checking here, he got 34 snaps, almost half of the snaps Sunday. Yeah. So, I mean, he's being involved in the game plan. So James Washington, if they see a situation where it's going to blow over and he'll just be a guy on the roster like James Washington is, great, keep him. But I'm with you on this. If he's a headache, and this is purely on Kevin Colbert, Mike Tomlin, Keith Butler, you know, look at this situation. If this guy's a headache, you have to make that call and make that judgment. If he turns and if you keep him and he turns out to be a headache, then you're going to look back at that and say maybe you should have unloaded him at least for something along those lines. But also the question is who would offer a fourth round pick for a guy who was floating around in free agency for quite a bit there. So
he has played well this year though. So maybe that's driven up his stock a little bit.
Maybe there is that possibility, but we got a few more things to talk about. I brought up some snap counts there. I want to get into some snap count talk right here with Tony Serino just a bit. But first I got to tell you guys about GetUpside. Hey Steelers fans, this is Chris Carter with an incredible app. Everyone who buys gas needs to know about it. It's called GetUpside. My listeners are making up to 25 cents for every gallon of gas every time they fill up. Just download the free GetUpside app in the App Store or Google Play right now. Use promo code touchdown to get a bonus 25 cents per gallon on your first fill up. That's up to 50 cents cash back, and don't pay full price at the pump anymore. Get cash back using GetUpside. Just download the app for free and use promo code touchdown to get 50 cents per gallon cash back on your first tank. That's promo code touchdown. Some people who drive a lot are making as much as $200 or $300 a month in cash back, and there's no catch. The cash back gets added right to your account. You can cash out anytime to your bank account, PayPal, or an e-gift card for Amazon or other brands. Just download the free GetUpside app and use promo code touchdown to get 50 cents per gallon cash back on your first tank. And again, that's promo code touchdown. Back here on the Locked On Steelers podcast, it's Tony Tuesday with Tony Serino. I'm your host, Chris Carter. We thank you for making the Locked On Steelers podcast your first listen every day. So, Tony, let's get into these snap counts.
Sure.
I'm looking at these numbers. Let's start on defense because that was where I thought there was a lot of intrigue as to how they use this team. Now, guys, normally 100%, Micah Fitzpatrick, Joe Hayden, Terrell Edmonds, sure. Cam Sutton, 92%, pretty much played, you know, those guys played the whole game. I was intrigued at the fact that they used Alex Highsmith at 92%. I mean, he missed five plays. That's a lot of time to be on the field.
You can say this. That groin injury has cleared up. I think he's perfectly fine, ready to go. Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's a problem there.
Yeah, there's no problem there. And on top of that, I think that he's proven that he was like, hey, you know what? There were some struggles there. You know, at different points in time, but he really came through in this game. And it won't show all the way on his stat sheet. He didn't get a sack. He only got four tackles. That's still a decent game there.
Yeah,
but I mean, the first sack was because he crashed the pocket and Baker Mayfield had to bail, and then he just got walloped by the rest of the pass rush. Alex Highsmith is an important part of this defense. I don't know how serious it is that he could play, you know, 92% of every game, but. Yeah. It's certainly not realistic, but it's certainly a good showing that he's ready to go there. And him and TJ Watt. But this is why I think Melvin Ingram is important to have, because you're going to have a game where, you know, the Browns only play 59 snaps on offense. There's going to be games where they play 65, closer to 70 snaps.
Yep.
You're going to need to be ready for those days, but still a good showing up front for what they got.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's going to be about whether or not guys like Taco Charlton, they can count on going forward. He's a guy that called up from the practice squad, former Dallas Cowboy. Actually, I believe he was taken before TJ Watt in that same draft.
He was. Trust me, Cowboys fans let us know that all the time, that why did we take Taco Charlton over TJ Watt? Yeah. Well, we don't know the answer to that. Yeah. Only you do, sir.
Oops. So yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, this was a game all about, you know, keeping those starters in there as much as possible. And you know, while Highsmith, you know, good against, you know, in the pass rush this game. I mean, this was all about shutting down Nick Chubb, and then they did such a great job of that. Going forward, you know, I guess it'll remains to be seen if Ingram gets traded in the next day or so, how much do they start using Charlton Moore and specifically as that kind of spot pass rusher like Ingram was?
Absolutely. Now, the other factors here that to look at on snap counts on defense, your boy, James Pierre, who had been a focal point of this defense, well, not a focal point, but a much used part of this defense.
I would call him a focal point. I would call him a superstar.
I gave him too much, and here you go.
The center of the defense, you know, basically all 10 players revolve around James Pierre. Yeah, I get what you're saying, and I agree with it. But, all right, I didn't mean to cut you off there. Stop your point. You were saying?
Thank you. give Tony an inch. He will take a mile. Jeez. Anyways, I did. I walked right into that. That's my fault, Steeler fans. It's my fault. I gave Tony the rope. He just said that. Here, Chris. Mm-hmm. Anyways, James Pierre, only 7 snaps in this game. Trey Norwood, only 7 snaps in this game. Even Arthur Mollett as the normal slot cornerback, only 23 snaps in this game. That's 39% on this game.
Yeah,
you saw guys, Chris Wormley, 73%, Isaiah Bugs, 41%, Henry Mondo, 27%, even Isaiah Loudermilk with 25% snaps there. The Steelers went big against the Browns. And to me, Tony, this is more of a sign that they are very big this year on matchups, on, you know what, we're not coming out with the same guys every week. Every week, we're going to determine who we want out there, when we're out there. This isn't like your old school defense where it was Troy Polamalu, Ryan Clark, Ike Taylor, Deshae Townsend, James Ferrier, James Harrison. They, like, you know, you knew which 11 were going to be out there most of the time. You don't necessarily know with this defense. Is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? Do you think they might bite them later in the season?
Well, it's certainly not good as compared to the roster as it was last year. I mean, this was a more complete team a year ago, right? You know, you didn't have the question mark of like, who's going to play slot corner because Mike Hilton was so good, right? You know, who's going to come in at edge rusher? It's like you got, not only did they have Bud Dupree, but they had a young Alex Highsmith who was up and coming. So I do think like it's not a great thing for them, but you know, their ability in this game to lean on specifically that defensive line, those young defensive linemen you talked about, the Henry Mondos, the Isaiah Bugs, even the Isaiah Loudermilks. You know, you and I talked about this, whether it was a week ago or 2 weeks ago, about that performance against Seattle and how much had to change in these last 2 weeks in order for this run defense to step up. Because as we talked about, there was not going to be drastic shifts in personnel. They weren't going to go to some new guy coming off of IR or anything. It's going to need to be the same 11 guys just playing better football, playing more sound football. And I thought that they really did that in this game. And, you know, these snap counts, they show that this team was willing to stay in base a lot of the time. Rotate in those young players and Nick Chubb in this running game. While they had, again, that Browns team, they had their moments. They were just that. They were moments in this game. They never got a consistent running game going. I believe they were held to under 100 yards. So it was a monster performance specifically by that front seven.
That's the thing. The front seven was on fire and got to give credit to the coaches. We often smash the coaches when we see glaring mistakes, and it's easy to see, oh man, someone should have been there, right? It's easy to see when a touchdown's given up, man, that's just, you can say bad coaching or you could say, look at it and say, okay, maybe this player should have been here in this, that, and a third, but all the players were consistently in their spots. The one run play or that you could say that like, we're like, okay, that someone made a big mistake. Devin Bush over pursuing D'Ernest Johnson and giving him that lane for the touchdown. But that was, again, he had the proper spot to be in. He just over-pursued to the sideline.
Yep.
All last week, Mike Tomlin said it on Tuesday. Chris Wormley said it on Monday. Keith Butler said it on Thursday. Devin Bush said it on Wednesday. All the different players and coaches all said, this is, you know, gap assignment football. That was the Seahawks game was on us. We need to be better here, here, and here. They were better on those things. They addressed the things that I thought were glaring weaknesses and made them strengths in a huge divisional game and got a big win. To me, that's coaching. That's really good stuff there. And it says that, you know what? Maybe they don't necessarily need to go trade and get another defensive tackle. And it's just one game. It's just one game. But there's a little bit more confidence offered there. Before we switch out of snap count talk, I want to talk to you about the offense here.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you get your normal stuff. All the linemen played 100%. Ben Roethlisberger played 100%. By the way, I want to get your thoughts. Dan Moore Jr.,
yeah.
Well, you know, no. I'm sorry. We're gonna do that in the next time. We're addressing the running game in the next time. I apologize. Sure. I'm jumping ahead of the game here. But I look at this: Pat Freiermuth, 78% of the snaps. Zach Gentry, 61% of the snaps. That's a lot of 12 personnel.
Yes, it is. Loved it.
Yes.
You know, people got on the Steelers in this game for not helping out Dan Moore with Myles Garrett a lot. I thought it was an interesting game plan from Tomlin and Matt Canada. Because it opened up the idea that, hey, maybe we don't have to leave Najee in on every play. We don't have to leave in, you know, one of our tight ends in every play. And you saw Ben Roethlisberger really probably for the first time this year really consistently use the middle of the field. And it was guys like Gentry and Freiermuth who were able to be open because, you know, I said this, you know, on AFC North Talk last week. I thought the whole Myles Garrett versus Dan Moore thing was very overrated in the preview for this game because of the fact that Ben Roethlisberger gets rid of the ball so quickly. I mean, that's part of his game plan. It wasn't going to be that, hey, the Steelers are going to have to switch up their game plan and get rid of the ball quick because Dan Moore versus Myles Garrett is this massive, is this massive mismatch. Like, that's what they do. And I thought, you know, using that much 12, but then again, being able to use the middle of the field like they did with guys like Gentry and Freiermuth, I thought was big in the passing game. And those two guys in the running game, I mean, you know, again, I talk about the addition by subtraction with Ebron, man. Look, Ebron's been a nice player, but we know he's not a good run blocker. And Gentry, when he is in there, I mean, he moves people, and Freiermuth's getting there as well. So, love to see it.
Yeah, I do agree with you. I do love to see the way that they're using that. And again, Zach Gentry, they're finding ways to let him help out there. And yes, they are helping. I thought the way that they trusted Dan Moore Jr. was interesting. But Zach Gentry being out there as a blocker, and you saw an able cat receiver now.
Yeah,
you know, that was something that was a concern, was could he block? I mean, the question actually was, when coming out of Michigan, you know, could he block? Because everyone looked at him and said, man, like, he has the frame, he's huge, he's tall, and he can catch the ball, but can he block? And when you can't block, you're not that useful unless you're Eric Ebron, which with the way that he was able to run and cut and make plays deep down the field for you. But the catch that he had over the middle that wiped out a second and 24, that was just the, awesome. I mean, and I granted he was left wide open, but
I mean, look, this Browns team, I talked about this, this was a Steeler team that really wasn't going to be able, I thought, to create the kind of down the field route patterns that confused this Browns defense. Things we saw, you know, the Cardinals be able to do in weeks past, Charger. This Steeler offense is not that team. But I thought the way that they were able to use some of their personnel, they did do that. And that was, I thought, the biggest play of the game. He was left wide. I mean, clearly a broken coverage, wide, wide, wide open on a huge play. Yeah, like you said, erased a penalty, kept that drive moving. I believe they would go on to score a touchdown on that drive.
Yeah, that was huge. And as for other guys that were used, James Washington, 46% of the snaps, you know, not as many three wide receiver sets, obviously, but still part of the offense. But he clearly supplanted Ray McCloud, because that was a big question in Seattle. Like, well, you know, why was James Washington only used so much? But Ray McCloud moved back to 11 snaps, only 15%, a good 23 snaps less than Washington. Derek Watt used 8 times. Anthony McFarlane, I think Anthony McFarlane in 1 week took, you know, twice as many snaps as Kalen Ballage. Albeit it was 7 total snaps.
Yeah.
But clear, they want to try and get his speed to work out there in just his first game back. So just your thoughts on, you know, James Washington getting more of the reps like he should, and whether or not we'll see something different with that, with the backup running backs.
Yeah, I mean, the backup running back situation, boy, it is such a night and day thing. When Najee comes out, I mean, it is just, boy, oh boy. Mm-hmm. I mean, you really have an appreciation for how good Najee Harris is when you watch literally anyone else carry the football in the Steeler offense. Other than Ben's QB sneak in this game was pretty good. James Washington, though, you know,
that was actually an awesome play, even though it was called back. When he ran it in, I was like, that was.
I mean, the jokes that I was going to tell on AC North Talk were just...
Oh my God. That's the thing. Like, you left.
Which one do I use?
that was almost as bad as when the Ravens allowed Byron Leftwich to run for like a 20-yard touchdown, like back in 2013. Right. That still to this day is one of the craziest.
If only AFC North Talk existed back then,
that would have been amazing. Even though they lost that game, but more to your point on the running backs.
No, yeah, I mean, I think if the Steelers needed to trade for a player, maybe a trade for a backup running back at this point. I mean, Ballage hasn't been great. Benny Snell's a good special teamer, and then McFarland. I'm not ready to give up on McFarland yet, but again, we've talked about him a million times. I just think the game moves too fast for him. Like he's a fast player, but he needs to slow down. If that makes any sense.
No, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I thought James Washington. Look, he was fine. Boy, the rough holding call for him though on the end of round. Yeah, that was tough. Otherwise, he was. We'll see how. I think it's good that he's playing above Ray Ray, because we know that James Washington is a good player, and the more reps he gets, I think the better things are going to happen for him. So I'm happy to see him getting reps again. Only can mean good things for him in the future.
I agree. I think that there's some good stuff coming there. We got to talk about this run game a little bit, specifically the power of the run game and the offensive line and how they played. We'll also talk about Najee Harris. We'll do that in just a minute here. But first, got to tell you about Beachbound. In life, We're all bound for different things. With beachbound.com vacations, you could be bound for adventure and bound for passion, bound for discovery or bound for togetherness, bound for immersion or bound for rejuvenation. Or maybe you're bound for encountering the unexpected. Personally, when I'm at a beach resort, I'm bound to end up at the poolside bar or maybe creating my own taco flight. But as long as I've got a good view with a good drink in my hand, I'll be as happy as I can be on vacation. With beachbound.com, you can find the perfect beach vacation for you, no matter what you are looking for. What are you bound for? Visit beachbound.com today to make your beachbound adventure. Back here on the Locked On Steelers podcast, it's Tony Tuesday. Chris Carter with Tony Serino here wrapping things up. Tony, we got to talk about this run game. Now,
It's happening, right?
And I guess overall also the offensive line and pass pro, because this was a game where I thought Myles Garrett was going to eat Dan Moore Jr. alive. I thought he was going to take his lunch. I thought he was going to throw his lunch. I thought it was just going to be ugly, and that the Steelers needed to have Najee Harris. They needed to have Zach Gentry. They needed to have Zach Banner, but they made him inactive. They needed to have everyone making sure Dan Moore Jr. was fine by himself. And they did occasionally, but there were so many reps. Dan Moore Jr. was left by himself, and Myles Garrett only got one sack in this game.
Yeah.
That's insane.
It was incredible, and I thought it was a masterful job. Again, by Matt Canada and Mike Tomlin and the plan coming in to understand, look, the idea of this offense is to get rid of the ball really, really quickly. When you're getting rid of the ball really, really quickly, like, again, Myles Garrett's very, very fast, and he can get to the quarterback pretty quickly, but not that quickly. And so, I think PFF gave Dan Moore like a zero in this game or something. I actually think they really did. I think they legitimately gave him a zero in this game because it's not to say like Dan Moore shut down Myles Garrett. Myles Garrett hit the court. He hit Ben, I think, four or five times or something in this game. He got plenty of pressures. He had a sack, but it didn't matter because, again, Ben's getting rid of the ball so quickly that he was neutralized on pretty much every snap. And I thought, as I said, in the last segment, I thought that really opened things up in the middle of the field, because you're not having Najee.
Holy smoke. They literally gave him a zero.
They gave him a zero, right? Yeah, I saw that.
I was like, let me check with it. Good. PFF said a 0.0 pass blocking. I've never seen that from a starting offensive tackle. But, Tony, how does he get a 0.0 when he only gave up one sack?
It goes to the idea of, quarterbacks, sacks are sometimes a quarterback stat, right? He's holding on to the ball too long. I would argue that the play where Myles Garrett did get a sack was probably more on Ben than it was on Dan Moore. Ben held on to the ball a little too long. This is all a game about getting rid of the ball quickly and getting the ball down the field and freeing up Najee Harris, freeing up Zach Gentry, freeing up Pat Freiermuth down the field, easy checkdowns or using that middle of the field, keeping that middle of the field open in the passing game. I thought it was a really good game plan. Again, Dan Moore got eaten up, as PFS grades would tell you. But he really didn't, because at the end of the day, when we start talking about, the plays that mattered, Myles Garrett was not involved in the plays that mattered as much as he won that matchup.
And see, that was what, I said this on the post game show that I did on Sunday for this game. If it's a fact that Dan Moore Jr. was getting eaten up, then that means that this was some amazing schematic stuff that Matt Canada, Mike Tomlin, whoever came up with to make sure that Myles Garrett wouldn't compromise this game. And I also said that on the final word. The bottom line is, if Myles Garrett was winning those matchups, he did not compromise the Steelers offense in the way that I thought that he could have going into this game. But let's talk about the run blocking a little bit here, because I saw that's where Dan Moore Jr. I thought did have a good game.
Oh yeah.
He was bullying people. That is exactly what they drafted him to do, was to get out there, be pushing guys 5 yards down the field. I thought Trey Turner looked really good in the running. I thought the whole line, really. Chukwuma Okorafor, he's coming on. Like, he's figuring things out. He's starting to figure out the nasty.
He's like the Voldemort of the – we don't say his name. We don't say his name that we can't – he can't – because, he's shocking his turnaround. Considering what he was a season ago. This whole offensive line, I think, is just getting more comfortable in their assignments, better at getting to the second level, on those plays. I mean, I just, yeah, it is a pleasure to watch, especially, you know, as bad as those first 3 weeks were, and, you know, really even that, you know, the Packers game was better, but not, still not great from a run blocking perspective. It just felt like, boy, it's really, I mean, they're still so far away. It felt like, boy, it's going to be so long before we really see real drastic improvement. But no, I mean, here we are three games after that. And this run game, Chris, in the last 4 weeks of the, in the last 4 weeks of the season, they're rushing EPA top 10 in the league. Top, wow. They're a top 10 wow. rushing team in the last 4 weeks, or the last four games that they've played. This is real drastic improvement in the running game. And they're becoming the kind of team that we kind of expected going in, right? I mean, you know, if this team can run the football, limit Ben Roethlisberger to, hey, you got to make a couple plays here and there and win this thing defensively, that's a winning formula for the Steelers in 2021. And that's what they've done for the last 3 weeks. We'll see how they do. They got some tougher tests in the second half of the schedule for sure. But this is that kind of frisky Steeler team that we were talking about in the offseason. You talked about, you know, adding Najee and what happens if this running game gets going. Like, we're starting to see that on the football field. And it's bearing out with W's.
It certainly is. And I mean, you can't ignore the success that they've had on the ground game in the last few games. And even though, like, Najee Harris, 91 yards, 26 carries, that's not like a phenomenal number. That's not like Derrick Henry, even though unfortunately Derrick Henry looks like he's done for the season. That's insane, by the way.
Yep, not good.
Well, not good. And for the Steelers
do play him later on. So, you know,
right. Is that the game you're coming to town for?
I'm trying real hard.
Okay.
Maybe that or the Browns one. Trying.
Okay. But more to the point is Najee Harris hasn't had those ridiculous numbers just yet, but you're starting to see him figure things out. You're starting to see him be more comfortable. I mean, like in this last game, 3.5 yards per carry. The game before that, 3.38 yards per carry. But he scored touchdowns in both games. They've needed those touchdowns in both games. He's creating on his own. And a lot of those yards, too, there's times when the offensive line does play well, but when the offensive line starts playing well, it allows the running back to just like, okay, I know when to be aggressive. I know when to charge forward. And you saw him creating those extra yards, beating defenders in the hole. There, you know, there was a, I think it was a third and one or a fourth and one where the Steelers were stacked up at the line. And I thought the Browns, they had it. And somehow Najee Harris found his way through that pile.
Yep.
That's the kind of stuff that he did all through college. That's why he was worth a first round pick. And I said it then, I say it now.
Yep.
He was the right pick for the Steelers. And what's really interesting, Tony, like you said, this offensive line, I said before the season, week 8, litmus test. Can they beat up the Browns coming off the bye week? Can they handle this front that's loaded with Jadeveon Clowney and Myles Garrett and all the other guys? They lined up all these people, and they came out and they did, and there's not nary a first or second round pick on them.
No, and this is the huge thing for this season is like, look, you know, obviously the Steelers are now, what, a game out of first in the AFC North. Like, we could obviously, Steelers fans can start to daydream about this team potentially winning the division, certainly making the playoffs is an option. But even if that doesn't happen, the fact that this team had to rebuild their offensive line without a lot of assets to go out there and get them, right? Not a bunch of salary cap space to go out and get with veterans, and they needed to get a running back early on in this draft, these second-round pick, to get a tight end. The fact that this team may have, with third and fourth-round picks, gone out there and rebuilt this offensive line basically from scratch. And if they were to hit on, I mean, even two out of the four young guys they have on that line, that's huge for this team. But right now it looks like, I mean, again, we talked about Chooks, and I just might be 4 out of 4. I mean, if this team hits on 4 out of 4 of these offensive linemen, you go into next season, yeah, they got to figure out what to do without Ben Roethlisberger, but you don't have – this team might go into an offseason without a quarterback problem and an offensive line problem. If they have an offensive line they can trust going into next season, it makes finding that quarterback or plugging in a quarterback that much easier.
It's funny, we talk about a lot on national media with you know, the quarterbacks taking up too much of your salary cap space. What if the Steelers had a situation where the offensive line wasn't taking up any of their salary cap and the quarterback, and they allowed themselves to go get the expensive quarterback, and it works in reverse where you're really confident in your O-line. Now you get this quarterback that you really like, or if you draft a young guy, and then it allows you to say, you know what, we got money to spend at cornerback, safety, linebacker, wherever you want to do.
You know, it always felt like this team was going to be kind of left for dead after this season. Boy, you know, they're going to lose Ben, and they got all these problems to work out. But you know, today, and I know we're all riding high because, like, the Steelers beat the Browns. That's a huge win. Like, realistically, though, if you're trying to convince a guy like Aaron Rodgers to come to town, it's a pretty easy case to make when you say, oh, you're going to be playing alongside Najee Harris going right into the prime. You're going to be playing with Deontay Johnson, who could be a true number one if he had a quarterback who could throw in all three levels. You got a tight end emerging in Pat Freiermuth, and you got a young offensive line who's going to be here for a while. Like, do you want to come play with that team? And, oh, by the way, this defense has multiple elite players on it. It's not a hard case to make for Aaron Rodgers. You're not coming in and saying, like, well, Aaron, you know, we'll hopefully figure out this offensive line thing, and, you know, we got some wide receiver. No, they may have found solutions with young guys at all those positions.
I agree. And if they did, man, what could this team be?
There's no rebuild. There's no rebuild. There's no nothing. It's just a roll on here in Pittsburgh.
Absolutely. Tony, we got to get out of here before I get yelled at for making too long of a show here on YouTube. Thanks so much for joining me, man. It's always a pleasure having you here with us. Let people know they can find you, follow you, and get more of your work.
You can follow me on Twitter at Steeler Country. Make sure you watch AFC North Talk. It's a roundtable show all about the AFC North. Of course, I'll be gloating about my Pittsburgh Steelers on that show and letting Bengals fans know, a welcome back to reality after they lost to the Jets. So make sure you check that out. AFC North Talk on YouTube.
Absolutely. Do check out Tony. He does a lot of great stuff and he's hilarious. He's entertaining. He's the man. Check out everything he does. You can follow me, Chris Carter, on Twitter and Instagram at Carter Critiques. You can read my work at dkpittsburghsports.com, or you can follow this podcast, the Locked On Steelers podcast, Monday through Friday, breaking things down on your Pittsburgh Steelers on Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Odyssey, and YouTube. Like this video on YouTube. If you've enjoyed it, please subscribe to our channel. It really helps us out. If you want to help us out even more, go on Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star review with a positive comment, and you will get a shout out at the end of the show. Be back tomorrow with more on your Pittsburgh Steelers.